Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I tried to be a flop. I tried to be a slay. This is Flop Culture. Welcome back to Flop Culture, a podcast where we mainly talk about flops, but we also talk about bops, we also talk about hot goss, everything in between. I'm your host, Fionnuala J, delighted to have you with me. Hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Louise Bruton on I Know Who Killed Me. Very appropriate coming up to Halloween, spooky season, I think you'll agree. If you haven't listened, go check it out. We're going significantly less spooky this week, I suppose, depending on who you ask. But before we talk flops, let's talk news, shall we? Maya Jama is the new host of Love Island, which we all already knew, didn't we, essentially? Good for her. Good choice. I do wonder if it's going to affect her contract with Glow Up, which is the makeup makeover show on BBC Three that is really, really good if you have never watched. Cannot recommend enough. Some of the seasons are on Netflix as well. She replaced outgoing host Laura Whitmore. They exchanged pleasantries on Instagram. Laura said she's going to be really good. We obviously have Winter Love Island coming up, set in South Africa this January, and then the normal summer season business as usual. I think she'll bring a lot of that good Glow Up experience to Love Island. She's very sweet with the Glow Up contestants, very tender in a way that I think will be really beneficial for a show like this, where the contestants need to be especially protected because they just are so front and center and so open to scrutiny. I'm not, in terms of her, like, for this to really work for me, and again, this is just my opinion, which ultimately counts for diddly squat, for the whole series and for the host more than anything else, I think they need to pull back on trying to make it nearly a comedy. Like, let Ian Sterling, the narrator, do that. Let the editors do that. Let the contestants do that. Because it's not funny when you're trying, like, really, really hard. And that's not to say that I don't actually think Maya Jama is funny. I think she's very naturally charismatic in a way that humour isn't laboured. If she is funny, it's very tongue-in-cheek. It's not her, you know, rigorously trying to set up a joke, here's the lead up, here's the punchline, et cetera, which was what I feel like they were really leaning on heavily with Laura, which didn't translate. That's why it felt, I think, kind of stilted as it did, especially with After Sun. I kind of think After Sun needs to be overhauled altogether. I'm not entirely sure how, because I like the individual parts of it, obviously. Like, I think when a panel is good, it works really well. Like, we saw how good Joanna McNally was on close to the final this year, if you watched. And sometimes they get the mix right with other people where they have, like, good opinions and, like, the banter or whatever. Sometimes they don't work though. And then the behind the scenes stuff, sometimes that's interesting. And then, but when they set it up as a comedy bit, like, it's not, and it loses me. And then also sometimes the behind the scenes stuff just isn't interesting. They don't care about Becky Hill going into the villa. And like, great that she loves it. Great that she loves the show. Great that she's like, this is the best experience of my life. That kind of means nothing to me and has no importance for me as a viewer, to be totally honest. I love the sneak peeks, the actual interviews with past contestants, family members, yada, yada, yada. Maybe the format as it stands just needs Maya to inject a little bit of oomph into it and then the format will be better. I'm not sure. What do you think? How could After Sun be better? How can Love Island improve for you? Get in touch with flapculture_pod on social media and obviously on email, helloflapculture@gmail.com. I don't know. If they do overall After Sun, does that mean she'll be in the actual show more? How will that look? Time will tell. I'm going to be honest, I am dreading this winter season. I'm just not looking forward to it. It barely worked the last time. If you're going to give us something like this and more Love Island, then give us All Stars. I don't want to say I have no interest in it because obviously I'm going to watch, but there is just a part of me that's like, this is too much. This is way too much. But we'll see. Angela Lansbury passed away this week, award-winning Murder, She Wrote star, 5 days away from her 97th birthday, enjoyed a hugely successful 80-year acting career, receiving an Honorary Academy Award, 6 Tony Awards, 6 Golden Globes, 1 Olivier Award, was nominated for 18 Emmys in total. What a stacked trophy cabinet. Best known, as I already mentioned, for Murder, She Wrote, Other People Know Her from Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Gaslight, The Manchurian Candidate, so many other things I could list. Very close ties to Ireland. She actually moved her family here when her daughter was, I didn't know this, getting involved with Charles Manson and his crew of terrible people. At that point, Angela's daughter and her son were drug users and were kind of going down this path, and she, the daughter, was getting very involved with Manson and was just like fascinated by him and this following that he'd built up for himself. And Angela was like, what do we do? What the hell do we do? Bring them to Cork. Cork is the solution to everything. Up sticks, moved them across the Atlantic to County Cork in Ireland, where she called home for many a year and has many family ties there. And she loved Barry's tea, the correct tea to love. Don't at me. I'm right. And so was she. Rest in peace, Angela Lansbury. Very sad news this week. And then finally, this doesn't really qualify as news. It kind of does, I suppose. We got a trailer for Megan, and I desperately want to talk about it. Megan, Meetregan, if you will. This is a new horror coming out next year, 2023. Here's my synopsis from watching the trailer, and I will leave the trailer in the show notes because I need you to watch this and we all need to enjoy it together. But here's my very brief synopsis of Megan. There's a girl. The girl's family dies in a car crash. RIP. That's obviously bad. She is taken in by some other child-hating guardian who is like, what do I do with you? I have my own life to live and dinner reservations. I can't be entertaining you. Put on Bluey or whatever. Sort yourself out. But then, luckily, she's like, oh my God, I'm a woman in STEM. I have the solution for this. Here's an android friend, which is essentially a yassified Chucky. Here you go, little girl. Go forth. Make friends. Make friends with the definitely not evil robot who's not going to kill you. Here's your android girly pop who can do the renegade with you, make all the TikToks you want, and doesn't want to kill me or your friends. Don't worry about it. Also, I've never seen a robot. What could possibly go wrong? The doll has the worst wig I've ever seen in my entire life. All that technology and you can't get poor Megs a good like lace front wig. Where was the budget here? Where was the budget? No wonder she's feral. I'd be feral if my hair looked like that, to be honest. At one point, she runs on all fours after some boy who's a dickhead to the real life girl who she's protecting. You just need to watch it. It's at one point, the android is like full body rolling. Maybe close to the time we can do like a flap culture screening where we all go together and see this because it looks so good. Other headlines I saw this week that made me want to die. Dua Lipa's pierced Uggs prove she's making new rules for fall fashion. incinerate that headline, incinerate pierced Uggs. What does that even mean? Don't want to know. Don't explain. And then also, this just made me feel old because I've no idea who this person is. Why Johnny Bananas was finally ready to return to the challenge. Good for you, Johnny Bananas. I'm glad you're ready and up for the quite literal challenge of the TV show, The Challenge. Anyway, I think it's time to talk flops. On Flop Culture this week, my guest is defending a much maligned pop album from one of the all-time greats. Without this album, we would not have the pop culture kiss that sends shockwaves across the globe, or the disco and dance revival of the mid-noughties. While retrospective reviews have been kinder, initial reviews of this record were mixed, to say the least, with one reviewer calling it frequently self-indulgent, misguided, unpleasant, difficult to listen to, silly and humorless, but also consistent, uncompromising and unapologetic, which is also what people say about this podcast. Pop culture journalist and broadcaster Jen Gannon joins me now to talk about Her Majesty herself, Madonna, and her ninth studio album, American Life. Jen Gannon, thank you so much for joining me on Flop Culture.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Tell the people what you picked.
I had two in my mind, but I am, first and foremost, I mean, I'm a Madonna gal, and I always think about, when people think about, you know, flops or stuff that's down the dumper, they always mention the American Life album by Madonna, and I am here to say, absolutely not, girl.
Is that a recent revelation for you, or have you always been fighting the good fight when it comes to American Life by Madonna?
I've always loved it. From minute one, from day one, from this very moment, second I ever heard the first note of American Life, I was like, I'm all in on this for sure.
I had actually never listened to it all the way through, and when you'd said it, I knew of the album kind of within pop culture, just as you said, you know, when you talk about flops, it was a name that always came up. And then when you suggested, I was like, this is going to be really interesting to listen to all the way through because I never did, whatever. And then I realized I was actually kind of more familiar with it than I thought. Like, I knew American Life and I obviously knew Hollywood, like I knew the singles. But a very interesting album, not what I was expecting at all. I'm kind of glad I went in blind to it. Can you talk to me a little bit about where Madonna was in terms of her career? Because I was just saying off air, Madonna, as much as I adore pop music, I'd be the first to put my hands up, Madonna is like a black spot for me in terms of pop culture and learning, which is why I'm doing this podcast, because I want to learn these things. Like, I'd be most familiar in terms of eras with her. It's like Confessions on a Dance Floor and Hard Candy.
Sure. So,
Where does American Life fall in the Madonna Queen of Pop journey?
Well, I mean, she was having a big time renaissance. Like, she was on the up and up, as in, like, post Erotica, when she came back with Ray of Light in 1998 and she worked with William Orbit, it was just sensational. It was like a rebirth. Everyone was like, oh my God, Madonna has done something like completely out of the bag. And she was like, you know, it's a drugs album without taking drugs, hint, hint. And everybody was just in love with Madonna. And then when Music came out in 2000, it was like riding the crest of the wave from like Ray of Light, because Ray of Light was so a critical smash hit, and she became like this, you know, darling of the music scene, and really embraced by like people that had never listened to a Madonna album before. They were like, my God, she's actually writing her own songs, and I didn't know she was like this. She was a genius. And then Music was like the extra level of that, because you had Ali G in the video for Music, and she was embracing like British culture because she'd started going out with Guy Ritchie, and everybody loved her. Everybody was mad about her at that time. It was maximum Madonna. Like, I mean, she mentioned Puppet. She did this secret gig for the launch of Music in, I think it was in Shepherd's Bush Empire. Correct me if I'm wrong, Madge fans, because they will. And she mentioned like Pop Bitch, and the crowd went wild, because it was really like, God, she knows stuff about, like, you know, what's going on and in the world at the moment. She's not this removed, because, you know, she was such a megastar, she could feel so removed. And then Snatch was released, Guy Ritchie's film, and they both wore t-shirts to the premiere of it, and She had, oh no, he wore a t-shirt that like was like, you know, a music t-shirt, a small girl's t-shirt. And she wore like a Snatch t-shirt and had "Come and Soon" written on it. And then she had like this full on suit at the premiere for Snatch, and I had Mrs. Ritchie on the back of it. So it was very much like she was becoming like the Mrs., like her indoors, and very like anglicized. And then when American Life came out in 2003, things had changed. She had full-scale moved to the UK, so America hated her anyway at that point. Then when the single came out, it was like, whoa, why are you talking about war? And why are you wearing a beret and looking like Che Guevara on the front of this album? Like, it was a ultra patriotic time for America because it was post 9/11, it was the Afghan war. And I think it, if you were anyway not towing the party line about like America the beautiful and fabulous, you were anti everything. Like, you have to realize at that time in America, things were wild. Like, as in, there was like people from like the CW, that channel, like that show stuff like, well, later on it would show Gossip Girl, but it's stuff like, you know, Gilmore Girls and stuff, and like other channels that like CBS or NBC, where Frasier was on, that they made them do these infomercials about how great America was, like just before the war kicked off in Afghanistan and just after 9/11, they were just like, America is amazing, rah, rah, rah. And then when American Life came out, and you know, just the last thing that Americans especially had heard from Madonna was her cover version of American Pie. And it was so, that's such a fable of Americana. And to go from that with her kind of wrapping an American flag around herself in the video, wearing a tiara, to then reappearing with this beret on and this very militant military feeling and very, they thought, an anti-American flex. It just went down like a fart in a spacesuit.
For sure, for sure. You've touched on the themes because sonically and thematically this is an interesting album and is a massive departure for her. Can we talk about the pop landscape of the time? Because when you look at that year in terms of the other pop albums, because she'd been kind of the trailblazer for pop at that time, but in terms of that year, you had Body Language from Kylie, Try This from Pink, which is her third album, which blows my mind. Britney was in her In the Zone era, Beyonce's debut album, Blondie was doing bits, Annie Lennox, Dido, Nelly Furtado. How sonically did this contrast to what, even beyond like what we knew Madonna for, how different was this in terms of the kind of mainstream charts and the pop landscape as we knew it then?
It's so different. It's quite a dark album. It's quite an introspective album. And I think that is a problem in general that the public, you know, at large have with Madonna. Because on one hand, right, they were so supportive of her for Ray of Light. And they were saying, look at her challenging stuff and being different and, you know, being a proper quote unquote artiste and, you know, not just being an anodyne pop girl. And then when she swerves again and does something like this, which is extremely, probably one of the most introspective Madonna albums ever, they're like, ew, we don't want this from you. Just shut up and dance on stage and, you know, make sunny pop songs. We don't want to hear, you know, anything about a woman being angry. And I think men do not do well, straight men do not do well, and sometimes female listeners do not respond well to a woman being angry. And I think the sound of American Life is like a mix of lo-fi kind of dance beats, but also acoustic stuff as well, because she was learning to play the guitar. She's still learning to play the guitar.
God of the prayer, Madge. God of the prayer.
Keep doing those bar chords, babes. But like, so I think, you know, she worked with Mirway, and Mirway did some of the music album with her. And I actually think when it comes to Madonna, she works best when she works with a single producer, because the album will then have a singular vision rather than being kind of all over the place. And I found her most recent albums, because you're employing 14 different producers, 20 different parts of songs, that they're each writing certain parts of songs. It's too fragmented and it doesn't have the same impact. So I think with Mirway, he wanted to, the two of them kind of connected about this idea of making it kind of like Massive Attack, because she always adores Massive Attack and she signed them to Maverick Records. She was a mad fan for them and she did, you know, I Want You, the cover version of the Marvin Gaye song with them, and it was totally beautiful. So she wanted it to be kind of like adult pop, but downbeat dance. So that was the vibe she was going for, that. And she was really into Lemon Jelly at the time, she was saying, which was weird. But, you know, so it wasn't of the era. It wasn't like Good Times, because when you think about it, Beyonce was coming out with like Crazy in Love, I think, around that time. So, I mean, it was completely different to anything like that. And, you know, with Kylie was moving into like, Body Language was such a moment for Kylie, but it was very, I don't know, a bit R&B flavored for Kylie, which was weird. And it was a kind of bid to move further into the American market, whereas Madonna was moving out of that. And I don't know where she was going. You know, she was trying to forge her own path and nobody liked that.
You've obviously picked this, and I know this occupies like a very sweet space in your heart. And as someone who is revisiting this fully for the first time, I found, or like visiting it for the first time, I should say, I found the first half like quite difficult, bar maybe like Hollywood, really liked I'm So Stupid. And then the latter half, I loved it. It was really like, as you said, there's that anger there, like very palpable sadness. I found her vocals really sweet, and like some of it sounds nearly like it wouldn't be a miss on a national record, you know what I mean? That's how like folksy it was. And then the production on other bits, it's like so jarring, sometimes in a good way, sometimes not. Some of the stuff I feel like has aged well, like it's almost like it was so ahead of its time that it wouldn't sound a miss now on the charts. And then there's other things, like we have to talk about American Life as a single. I don't love. Okay, why do you love it?
Okay, now, what I always say about this is people do not understand that. I mean, first of all, I always say if I had to do the Rose of Tralee and I was called upon to do a little party piece, I could only do the rap from American Life and the rap from Kylie's Shocked. They're the only things I know. And like, and also if I was at a wedding afters, that's the only thing. Everybody would be in the bar singing rebel songs and I'd be like, can I do American Life? Fire it up there. I'm ready. But the thing about it is that a lot of people, I don't think, understood or understand about that. It's like, she's taking the piss. She's taking the piss, A, out of herself in a way, because, you know, she's just like, oh, I have all this shit. And she's also taken the piss out of hip hop artists like at that time of that era, like 50 Cent and P. Diddy, who were like boasting about how materialistic they are and how they love having all their chains and the bitches. And she was just like, well, why, when I say it, why am I taken to task as being like, you know, a complete shrew who's obsessed with their wealth, when I'm trying to highlight the fact that the whole point of the song is about the fact that you can have all this shit and you're not actually satisfied. It's not about material things. Like, she was branded the material girl mistakenly because of the song, and she was always trying to shake that from that concept, that image from people's minds, because she's like, it's not about that. I'm post Ray of Light, everyone should know I'm on a different route. I'm on a spiritual kind of route. And I'm trying to tell you that these things will never make you happy. But she's also taking the piss out of herself because she's like, I have these things. I am boasting, and I'm boasting in that traditional sense of these, like, you know, macho hip hop artists. And I want to be one of the boys. And people just didn't get it. They just didn't get it. And I was like, they never get Madonna when she's trying to be funny, when she's trying to be arch or wry. They always take her at face value. And I love it. I just think it's such a ridiculous song. But I also just like how angry it is and how fierce it is. Like the lyrics where it's just like, I've tried to be a boy, I've tried to be a girl, I've tried to do everything that you bastards want me to do, and you're not fucking happy, so I'm just gonna, you know, be myself. And like, you'll never pigeonhole me, I'll never be what you want, I'll always defy your expectations. And it's a great mission statement for that album, because she's like, I'm not going to be an anodyne jukebox that I will repeat the same tricks over and over again, you know, I'm going to be something so different. And I think it's like guns ablaze. And she's like, yeah, you're either with me or you're not. And that's a great statement.
Blender magazine named it the 9th worst song of all time.
Yeah, men are stupid. Like, I'm sorry. Like, straight men are so dumb when it comes to Madonna. I've seen straight men show their full arses about Madonna so many times that sometimes I leave it. And sometimes I jump on Twitter and I'm like, you dope. Because, like, even an Irish Times journalist got a music journalist got the age that she was when her mother died wrong. And she literally says it in Mother and Father. You know, imagine getting that basic info wrong about Bob Dylan. It just wouldn't happen. Like, they would be strung up. And you just have to accept these things as a Madonna fan, like people not knowing anything. And they love, straight men just adore weighing in about her. Like, I saw a guy on Twitter saying, you know, what has been like one of the worst like songs on someone that went from something great to something shit. And like these two straight guys were having a conversation going, yeah, Madonna was amazing on Ray of Light and then Ew, American Life. And I was like, A, lads, she had music in between that. And B, you don't even know what American Life is. And they were like, oh, she did a rap on it. And I'm like, yes, do I have 2 hours to talk to you? But like, what I'm saying is, imagine a woman barging in on Twitter going, God, when Bob Dylan went all weird and religious, that was a joke, wasn't it? Like, she would have 90 saddos attacking her immediately. And you just have to accept this when you're a pop fan. So as a Madonna fan, you kind of build up this certain kind of armor towards like the indie publications, those kind of guys, and, you know, also the broadsheet, well, not the broadsheets, but also the tabloids, because both of them weirdly are on the same page. They just really don't get her.
Well, I was going to ask, with the Blender giving the song that chart position, and you don't agree with it, clearly, what do you think is the 9th worst song of all time?
Oh, I don't know. Probably like the fucking, I got that I'm like squaring like a trooper. Black Eyed Peas. Black Eyed Peas, I got a feeling.
That's a fair swap, I think. I'd agree with that. Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We talked about American Life, Hollywood as well as second single. I'm just going through the track list here. I'm So Stupid, Love Profusion, Nobody Knows Me, Nothing Fails, Intervention, Ecstatic Process, Mother and Father, you mentioned, Die Another Day, which we'll get to in a second, Easy Ride, Hollywood. What was the reaction there? Because American Life came out, obviously, and then people hated that because it was so different. And for all the other reasons you said, Hollywood was kind of more straight in the middle, not so straight in the middle, pop, yeah. Madonna being Madonna. What was the reaction like?
She got into so much trouble because the video is a great video, but they were sued. She was sued because it was Guy Bourdin, the artist, like his photography, certain kind of photography by him from a certain era. It's exactly the same as that. And obviously she didn't credit that or say anything about it. And it was just a direct lift. So there was a lawsuit about it. So that in itself had its own controversy because Guy Bourdin or Guy Bourdin, I don't know, he's French. What way do they say it? They always say it like Guy, don't they? Guy.
I'm just taking it as Guy, whatever. I'm taking it as Guy.
Madonna loves a bit of Guy. Come on. So his son sued them. So, I mean, it was not, this whole album was just mired in controversy because before that, like the American Life video that Jonas Åkerlund did for her was banned. Like, well, actually she pulled it because she was like, there was a lot of imagery in it of, you know, soldiers being killed and, you know, people fighting a war. And she was like, well, there's a literal war going on right now in Afghanistan and I better not do that. So, you know, even when she was trying to be less politicized in the second single, Hollywood, even though it was talking about I think like the themes of this album are so prescient right now, because, you know, Hollywood was talking about, you know, how fake everything is and how self-absorbed people are getting, and they only care about the image. And like, it kind of just preempted everybody being obsessed with selfies and Instagram. But she couldn't move away from controversy, because that was the everyone just remembers about the video and the lawsuit rather than the song itself. I mean, it wouldn't be anything like my favorite Madonna single or anything, but it's fine on the album. I don't like, it's a fine part of the album, but it wouldn't even be my favorite track on the album at all.
Die Another Day then. Where do you stand on that? Obviously the Bond theme for the movie of the same name probably could fall into a category of flops as well. If anyone wants to come on and talk about Die Another Day, someone did come on to talk about a Bond movie, but because I don't know when I'm releasing this or in what order just yet, I'm not going to say what it is.
Okay.
This is one, in my opinion, this is one of the best Bond songs.
It's funny because
though, again, depending on what you read or who you ask, some people are like, it's class, or you've the Bond like enthusiasts who are like, it's not a Bond song. And that's mainly what was said at the time, again, because the production is very in line with the rest of the album. It's very like techie, jarring, like the kind of chopped up vocals. But I love it.
Like, I think you ask Madonna to do a Bond song, she's not going to give you something conventional. So you have to know that. Like, she's going to do it in line with whatever she wants to do. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, for a lot of normos, like sad sacks, they just want someone like Adele, you know, screaming her lungs out about being depressed over a man. And that, you know, it's not really Madonna's style. And as well, she always will come from things at a totally different angle, where it's like, you know, she's like, I want to be James Bond. I don't want to be the Bond girl, whereas usually the Bond themes are all very phallic and sexualized. And I think they probably thought Madonna would be like, oh, she'll vamp it up and, you know, give a veiled reference to a peen or something. And she was just like, no, I'm going to talk about like the ego death, the death of the self. And I was like, this is so funny to me that they must have been, I would love to have seen their faces when they got this song, when it dropped for them, what they were like. They were probably panicking, just going, there's nothing to this that we can promote as, like, they wanted her to be Breathless Mahoney. Like, they didn't want her to be Madonna. And she was just like, nah, I'm into just like doing my fencing and rolling around on the ground and being like this action hero who, like, in the video, she's being tortured. Like, and that's just totally Madonna. She's just like, it kind of has that little bit of an S&M edge to it as well. And like, I just love that there's a whole stupid bit in it where she's like, Sigmund Freud analyzed this. And it's like, analyze James Bond, the biggest misogynist to ever walk the earth, and being like an absolute smash hit for like decades. So I think, like, I don't know, I think they expected her to toe the line, especially because they were like, we're inviting you as a Yank into a British tradition because you're married to a guy from the UK. And she totally was like, nah, I'm going to subvert this shit and really piss you off. And I love that.
You said Hollywood probably wasn't your fave from the record. So yeah. What is your fave? What do you think is the strongest song on this album? And then, by the other hand, where do you think she kind of falls the flattest?
I guess my favorite, God, I have so many favorites on this album, and I'm not even joking. Like, Nobody Knows Me is probably one of my favorites, just because it's about how she just doesn't want to be perceived at all. And it's all like, you know, I don't waste my time reading magazines, and like, she just doesn't want the tabloid kind of intrusion on her life, and that she just thinks she's been, you know, misrepresented, and she can't, like, finds it very hard to speak for herself in that way. And I just love the sound of it. I just think it's unbelievable. But another, like, I love Ecstatic Process is another absolute fave, because I think, like, when I broke up, I had a massive breakup, I listened to that constantly, and that's just her and a guitar, and the words are just so intense, because it's a really personal album, because even though she was married at the time to Guy Ritchie, there were already cracks, and that album, I mean, that song in particular kind of addresses the beginning of that, the end of that relationship already, because it's kind of like, I lost myself in this relationship because I thought you were amazing. And she kind of was saying, like, you know what, I'm special too. And it's like, imagine being Madonna and thinking you're not good enough. And he's Guy Ritchie, he's just going around pretending to be a Cockney. Like, it's so embarrassing. But they would be like probably my two favorites. And I also love Mother and Father just because it's so vulnerable. It's about like the death of her mom and how devastating that was for her. I just think they're three of the best, definitely. On the other side of things, Love Profusion, I always skip it because it was on an ad. It was on a perfume ad and it always still reminds me of, I think it was on a weird Estee Lauder ad. And I was like, oh, Madge, no, bye. So I can always live without that. I'm like, that's the only one. I think that is literally the only one I ever skip. Yeah, when I listen to it, that is the only one.
That's a good enough reason to skip something for me, to be honest. You mentioned there about how like personal and vulnerable she gets on this album. How big of a factor do you think that was in the album flopping, in inverted commas? Like, I know there's a myriad of reasons and we'll get into them a little bit later on and before I let you go, but like, how do you think that played a part in it? Because it's, I suppose, again, when you compare it to the artists that we talked about previously, it wasn't really what we were being sold at the time. And as you said, like, they were just married. Like, were we used to seeing that from her or no?
No, I mean, I think with Raya Light, people were like, oh, I'm delighted that she's talking about motherhood and like how happy she is to have a baby. And like, everybody was really like, that's such a cool, you know, glimpse of, you know, being a mother and how meaningful that is. And they loved that kind of personal business from her. But then with music, like, people were so high on new Madonna that with music, I think they love the singles. It kind of, there was other themes on music, like, where, you know, what it feels like for a girl, where it's just like an amazing kind of look at what it's like to be a female artist and a woman moving through the world that is judged on your sexuality, but also, you know, I deserve it. Like, she got very mushy on music about Guy Ritchie. There's a whole line in I deserve it, I think. And it's like, this guy was meant for me and I was meant for them. And it was like, okay, yarg, Madonna, I know you're in love, but I'm going to get sick. So they kind of enjoyed her being personal in that way, where she's being romantic and, you know, lovey-dovey. But then, and because it was Guy Ritchie, whatever. But then with American Life, it was something more. It was something deeper. It was like an exorcism. It was like her therapy. It was like, you know, she says on Mother Father that she's like, I've got to give it up. I've got to find someone who loves me. I've got to let this go. And it was like, I have to let my past go. I can't. I have to move on and not be this person anymore. Like, she's always been personal on her albums, like Erotica, you know, even Like a Prayer, like that album, that was really when she started to like really inject herself more and more, her personality and her life more and more into her music. But I think this was like a different side to her, where it was extremely introspective. And I don't know if people want that from their pop stars, because that, I was going to pick Kylie's album, Impossible Princess, for this as well, because that was the same thing when Kylie started to kind of turn in on herself. And basically Kylie was having a breakdown, you know, during that album. People didn't want that. They were like, oh, where's Smiley Kylie? And that's the thing. And it's like, what do you expect from your female stars? Do you want them just to be, you know, souped up porno girls, or do you want them to have a brain and be artists? Like, and it's that dichotomy that women in pop will always be caught in, because it's like, you're a product at the end of the day, you're a product, whereas men are allowed to be absolutely anything they want to be.
The album did commercially like okay, obviously, because it's still Madonna, it's still that time in music, she is still like the juggernaut that she still is today, to be honest. But I suppose by Madonna standards, it didn't do commercially as well, and we've already talked about like critically people didn't get it, everything else. Where did she go from this? Like, what was her next move, and did she take on board, like, how much did this album kind of not doing what the previous records had done, how much did that impact her, if at all?
I think she was licking her wounds for a long time, because we have to say, preface this by, before this album, she had this god-awful film called Swept Away that she made with Guy Ritchie. And it was basically him taking the piss out of her and her life and her work. And it was horrible. It was like a really... like trying to take her down a peg or two through this film. He directed it and he made her look really horrible. She was trying to take the piss kind of out of herself by playing this selfish kind of diva. And but in the context of the film, he's ripping her apart in it, and he's being really nasty about her, like through the context of the film. So between that and then this album doing really badly, she took time out. She did the tour, she did the reinvention tour, and that really boosted her appeal, because forever, as long as Madonna has been successful, everybody's wanted her to do a greatest hits tour. They wanted her to do, you know, just jam out the hits, just do the Immaculate Collection every single night. And the reinvention tour was people's chance to see that, but with the little bits of American life injected into it. So basically she was giving the fans and the casual listeners what they wanted, because American Life hadn't done maybe so well. And that was a massive mega tour, and, you know, got amazing reviews everywhere. And it's still one of the best shows I've ever seen in my entire life. And then, because on the tour, she worked with Stuart Price to kind of structure some of the songs and kind of mold the tour, like mold these songs into the tour. She kind of, I think, was like, oh, he's cool. He gets me. They had a good relationship. And that's when they started planning the Confessions album. And that's when she was like, do you know what? I'm going to give those gays everything they want. I'm going back to the dance floor, babes. I'm off to the dance floor. And, you know, truly created one of the most mind-blowing albums. Like, when I hear Renaissance by Beyoncé, I'm going, yes, this is it. This is her version of Confessions, you know? So, yeah, she just went back to the drawing board and said, well, what am I good at? I'm a pop star. I'm a dancer. I've always been a dancer. And what do I want to do? I want to dance it out. I want to dance all my problems out and be euphoric. And I think people need to remember that there would be no Confessions without American Life, because American Life was like her therapy. It was like exercising those demons of the past and really trying to get to grips with who she is, because I think Guy Ritchie made her feel bad about being Madonna for so long. And she says when she broke up, after they divorced, she was like, I spent so much time where he made me feel really small. And I think she had to get back to know. And they weren't officially broken up by the time Confessions came out or anything, but she had to kind of get back to who she was and be proud of who she is, which is such a weird thing to say about Madonna, because you think, oh my God, she's a massive ego. But a man like that managed to chip away at her.
Jen, you've done a great job at selling this album. But for anyone who is maybe still on the fence, what's your elevator pitch on why American Life is not a flop and people should go investigate it immediately?
I think that it's profoundly impactful, and all the themes of the album we're still ruminating over today. It's about superficiality, it's about apathy, it's about nihilism, it's about political disillusionment, it's about, you know, America burning, America being the seat of crazy evil. It's anti-patriotic, but also it's very fragile, it's very deep. It's about, you know, losing yourself to somebody or losing a parent. It's great about grief. It has all these things wrapped up in this kind of mad, wonky, lo-fi dance disco feel to it. It's such a, you know, real midnight, like post-party come down album that I just adore.
You will have to come back to talk about Impossible Princess, but until then, where can people find you, listen to you, read you, et cetera, et cetera?
I am on Twitter saying, like, probably illegal things about Timothée Chalamet all the time. sorry, ma'am. At Jen Pops, so it's JENN Pops. And I'm on Instagram as The Jen Gannon, where I just put up pictures of gorgeous men, usually. Sorry, I'm a thirsty bitch.
You're damn right. You run a great pop night as well. Give a shout out for that.
Oh, yeah. So I run a night with my friend Kian, Lime and Fancy, and we do it everywhere, sometimes in the Bernard Shaw, sometimes in Wigwam. And it's just all 80s hits and 90s house and Italo disco. And then I'm on the radio sometimes on Arena, on RT Radio 1 and 2FM with Dave Fanning sometimes. So I'm everywhere.
Here, there and everywhere. Jen Gannon, it has been an absolute pleasure to receive this Madonna education from you, and I'm absolutely serious about coming back to talk about Impossible Princess, because that's another album I know nothing about. So thank you so much, Jen.
Thank you. I will definitely be there.
Big thanks again to Jen for stopping by. She will be back, no doubt. And also a hearty congratulations to Madonna herself on recently coming out via TikTok. It's a very 2022 sentence, is it? Good for her. Let this be the year that we reject capitalism and men. That's what I say. If anyone hasn't seen that video, I'll link it below. I can't explain it. I hope that it someday makes its way into books about media literacy or something. But anyway, until then, let's see who is top of the flops this week.
You're a flop.
Top of the flops this week is Nicola Peltz-Beckham for naming her dog with Brooklyn Beckham label. Roll the clip, Adam.
Fun fact about Brooklyn. He loves labels, like in your clothes. And so last year for Christmas, I had a suitcase full of them customized for him. That's why our dog is named Label.
Yes, Peltz-Beckham was speaking to British Vogue, sharing what's in her handbag, as you do. And in the handbag, she had this label. And she started telling the story, which was kind of sweet if she just hadn't. Anyway, whatever. She started telling me a story about how Brooklyn is obsessed with labels, like from clothes. And for Christmas, she ended up getting him, as a Christmas present, all of these custom-made labels that say, like, different sweet things on them, whatever. But he is so into labels that it led to them naming their dog Label. Label. The only animal with the name Label that I recognize is that little cute bitch from Animal Crossing who makes clothes, okay? Everyone else does not exist to me. You're unhinged. Unhinged. That's like naming your dog Sleeve. Do you know what I mean? Or Buttons. No, actually, sorry. Buttons works. Buttons does work. Collar. Fetch collar. Dogs wear collars anyway. Moronic. That couple, I don't understand them. Quite frankly, I don't want to understand them. I never will. Some things are enigmas. Enigmas wrapped in riddles. That couple is one of them. And that is all I have to say on that. Is your dog name Label? Don't message me if it is. I don't want to know. I don't want to know about your life choices. That's all I'll say on that. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Flap Culture. We are on Instagram and TikTok under flapculture_pod, and you can get in touch at helloflapculture@gmail.com. If you leave a 5-star review and your name or nickname on Apple Podcasts, I would recommend a bop or a flop to you. So get them in. You'll get a nice specialist recommendation from myself. You can also leave a 5-star review on Spotify if that's your listening platform of choice. Today's bop is for Disappointed 34565. I hope you're not disappointed with this recommendation. I don't think you will be. Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. It's a 2008 American romantic comedy drama starring Michael Cera and Kat Dennings, written by Loreen Scafaria, people will know from Hustlers, aka the greatest movie of all time. And it's based on the novel of the same name by Rachel Cohn and David Levithan. And it tells the story of teenagers Nick and Nora, played by Michael Cera and Kat Dennings respectively, who meet when Nora asks Nick to pretend to be her boyfriend for 5 minutes. Over the course of the night they spend together, they try to find their favourite band, Secret Show, and search for Nora's drunken best friend. It's a very good. I haven't watched it in a few years, so I'm going to watch it this weekend as a treat. And thank you again, Disappointed 34565, for your 5-star review. Podcast has been edited, as always, by the lovely Adam Shanahan, and artwork is by Brian Lambert. With that, I will see you next week. Toodaloo!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.